Thank you for joining me for today's public information briefing. Under charter government, the county executive has the responsibility to create and present legislative initiatives and to advocate for county priorities during the state legislative session in Annapolis. Local bills are presented each year to our state delegation for their consideration during the legislative session of the Maryland General Assembly. This collection of bills and position statements is commonly referred to as the county's legislative packet or package. Legislative initiatives are developed each year with ideas gathered from the public, from county agencies, from a variety of civic organizations, from municipal leaders, and the county council. I believe the way we develop our legislative priorities with an extensive public input process is an example of good government, as well as open and transparent government. And I think this approach is unique and pretty much exclusive to Frederick County among charter counties. The General Assembly session begins on the second week of Wednesday of January each year. So this year, the session will convene on January 12, 2022, and will run for 90 days into early April. Each year, a few months after the session ends, we begin to review the past session and develop legislative initiatives and priorities for the following years. So it is an ongoing process. Now, to ensure public input, my administration kicks off the process each year by sending out letters, usually in early August, to cover 75 nonprofits and civic organizations. We solicit their ideas. We ask them to identify issues or concerns that they think could best be addressed by state legislation. Now, we have had several organizations responded with information and suggestions for legislation or bills and position statements. This week, the County Council wrapped up their discussion on their ideas for state legislative priorities. So now I will take all of these ideas and proposals that we've gathered to a town hall public meeting, again, to solicit comment and any new ideas. The virtual town hall meeting is scheduled for Wednesday, October 13th at 6 p.m. So this is my public process. So I don't normally, as a county executive, hold public hearings. So we call it a town hall. I encourage interested members of the public to tune in so they can comment on ideas or proposals that have already been presented and to weigh in with any new ideas or suggestions they have, because I know that the best ideas come from the people, and what's in our packet today pretty much demonstrates that. You can watch the town hall on Frederick County Government TV or at frederickcountymaryland.gov/legislativetownhall. So you can watch it on our on Channel 19, or you can watch it by video streaming it. Today, I'm kicking off the public process by sharing my legislative priorities for the 2022 legislative session, as well as all the ideas that have been gathered from the community and other organizations up until today. This is always a work in progress, and it's the beginning of a public process. No decisions have been finalized, and we could potentially add additional bills. So this year, I am proposing to advance four pieces of legislation. The first bill I'm proposing makes two changes to the Natural Resources Act regarding the long-standing forest banking program. These changes are to a section of law titled Forest Funding and relate to the Forest Resource Ordinance. This bill would allow the forest banking program, a long-standing program that's been out there for over 20 years, to continue until the year 2024. Last year, the state legislature decided to take this section of state law and do an overhaul, creating a study or technical review group to review and potentially modernize this section of law. As part of that, a change in the date for the forest banking program effectively resulted in this longstanding 20-year-old effective program coming to an end until this study and technical review is finalized. This bill that I'm proposing would keep the existing program in place until that broader review is completed and new recommendations are known. Now, Frederick County has preserved over 2,500 acres of existing forest through the Forest Banking Program. This constitutes 40% of the total acres of existing forest preserved under conservation easements in the county. Forests that have been saved include those along the scenic Monocacy River and other habitat for rare, threatened, or endangered species, as well as miles of buffers along small tributary streams. Restoring the ability to save existing forests under the program will allow Frederick County to continue preserving important forest ecosystems. The law currently amended last year prevents property owners from moving forward through this program with their forest conservation plans if they did not receive state approval of their plans by December 31st, 2020. Now, in Frederick County, this could prevent as many as 80 property owners from moving forward with their forest conservation plans, despite already having invested time and effort in their plans by hiring qualified forest professionals and surveyors to prepare forest banking plans. In addition, the inability to bank existing forests will discourage property owners from planting new forest. Frederick County requires all environmentally sensitive areas on a property to be entered into the banking program. So if somebody wants to come in and enter the banking program, we require that they add all the environmentally sensitive areas on their property. This would include stream buffers, floodplain, habitat for rare, threatened, or endangered species, and wetlands. The vast majority of the banking plans in Frederick County include the preservation of existing forest and the establishment of new forest. In many cases, the property owner must sell the existing forest credit in order to help them pay for the new tree plantings. Recently, because of the requirement to receive approval for a forest banking application by December 31st, 2020, we have had an applicant who had no choice but to abandon his proposal to protect existing forest along a stream included in the plan. While new forest can be planted to increase the stream buffer, the land closest to the stream cannot be protected with a conservation easement because it contains existing forest. This bill would remove the December 31st, 2020 deadline to receive approval for a forest conservation plan and allow the forest banking plan to continue until a state study on forest cover and tree canopy is completed, which is scheduled to be completed by December 31st, 2024, so that during the legislation, 23, so that the legislation can be updated in 2024 session. That study is intended to evaluate forest and tree cover in Maryland and present findings and recommendations to the General Assembly. So my goal in addressing this deadline is to ensure we can continue to bank and protect existing forest through the program until this study is complete, and to allow the findings to better inform any legislative and other changes to both the forest conservation program and the practice of forest banking. Now, the second change that I'm proposing to the forest funding section of the state law is to extend the time frame by which local governments, like counties and municipalities, can use deposited monies in the Forest Conservation Fund. So when a developer develops, they have to meet the Forest Resource Ordinance requirements. And one of the ways they can do that is through paying a fee in lieu. So these deposited monies from developers is what funds the Forest Conservation Fund. So this change was suggested by the town of Emmitsburg, again, asking for more time, and it would help many of our municipalities. Current law requires local jurisdictions to use the money deposited in this fund within 2 years. Spending these funds within that time frame can be a challenge for several reasons. First, since the creation of this program, there have been many state, local, and nonprofit tree planting programs established. Well, these numerous tree planting programs are a great benefit for increasing forest coverage across the state. They have made it more challenging for local forest conservation programs to effectively utilize money within 2 years because of many of the programs now competing for planting sites. Second, it takes a significant amount of time to find a suitable planting site, negotiate with the property owners, write and execute all the legal agreements, create the reforestation plans, obtain surveyor and tree planting services, which are required to be procured through, you know, a government process. And third, when the planting projects are identified, there are times when the project must be placed on hold until the appropriate amount of funds are collected. In some cases, it can take longer than 2 years to accumulate the necessary funds. This is particularly true for our smaller municipalities, like Emmitsburg. So having to return money after 2 years would jeopardize these planting efforts. So we're asking for a longer time frame for use of those funds. So that's the forest proposals. And we have talked with Senator Ron Young about these. The second piece of legislation I will request this year is a bill to protect our most vulnerable homeowners from the potential of losing their homes. And this is a property tax notification bill. During the pandemic, our services to seniors have increased exponentially. For example, demand for food deliveries to this vulnerable population rose over 600% during the height of COVID. So our staff has come to know intimately some of the challenges that vulnerable seniors face in living alone or far from their caregivers. To support their continued home ownership and housing stability, I am proposing legislation to allow seniors over 65 years of age or individuals with a physical or developmental disability to designate a third-party adult to receive a duplicate property tax bill, as well as any notice of unpaid property taxes. Allowing a caring and trusted adult to receive a duplicate bill can act as a safeguard for this group of homeowners and better ensure that these homeowners do not face consequences that are not related to their financial stability. The legislation proposes to allow property owners aged 65 or older or disabled to request third-party notification of their tax bill. This third party can be a family member, or it can be another trusted adult who can then make sure that the homeowner is aware that they've received a property tax bill and make sure the bill is paid. I want to make clear that this legislation in no way shifts the responsibility of the payment of the property tax. It merely ensures that our residents who may need a reminder, are able to get one to let them know that the bill has arrived. The third bill I'm proposing comes through a request of Heritage Frederick. Heritage Frederick, like all heritage or historic societies in the state, plays an important role in maintaining and keeping the history of our county. Many organizations, such as places of worship that convey marriage certificates, do not have the capacity to keep the entirety of those records for many decades. Thus, they often entrust a local heritage society or historic society with this responsibility. In fact, Heritage Frederick has housed and cared for numerous marriage records and certificates and has been acting as this repository for many years. The proposed legislation would redirect a portion of the state's judge's fee to perform a marriage ceremony to Heritage Frederick for the express purpose of, covering the costs of keeping these records and maintaining them. It's called a state judge's fee because it falls within the state judiciary system. The current fee, which again is set through a bill up through the state legislature, is $25 in Frederick County. Of this $25, $10 is currently deposited by the county clerk into the general fund for the county. The other $15 is retained by the clerk to be deposited and dispersed in the same manner as every other fee collected in the judiciary. Now, the bill I'm proposing redirects that $15 to Heritage Frederick for the purpose of covering the costs of storing and maintaining marriage records and certificates from other entities, such as places of worship. The legislation ensures accountability by requiring Heritage Frederick to report annually to the county the use of the funds received under this provision, and it gives the county the authority to request an audit of Heritage Frederick's financial records at any time. If this bill passes, it would add Frederick County's name into a legislation that already includes 9 other counties in Maryland to direct a small portion of the marriage ceremony fee in this manner to their local historic or heritage organization. Now, I do want to make something clear here because it was confusing to me when I first heard this proposal. This is not making a change in where the marriage license fee goes. The marriage license fee in our county is a separate fee, and that most of that goes to Hartley House or goes to domestic violence shelters and support services, and that's pretty much true across the state. So this is the actual marriage ceremony fee, so that's different. Now, I did speak to the clerk of the court, Sandy Dalton, because I thought this measure might impact her budget, and she investigated the use of the state share of these dollars. Now, Clerk of the Court Sandy Dalton has no objection to this bill, and based on the response of the judiciary, it appears there's no concern raised if this bill proceeds. However, Sandy Dalton did make it clear that she cannot speak for the state judiciary, so it's possible they'll come in and comment on this bill if it proceeds, but obviously this is something that is happening elsewhere in the state, so that's kind of unexpected. Now, the fourth and final bill I'm proposing to include in the legislative package, or at least take through the public hearing process, addresses the issues presented by unused or vacant burial lots. Now, this bill came as a request to me from the Pleasant Hill Cemetery Association in Monrovia. Out of their concern about how the ownership of unused burial lots can become fractionalized over long periods of time, which can make it difficult to maintain a record of the identities and whereabouts of those burial plot owners. The proposed legislation would require owners of an unused and vacant burial lot to maintain a mailing address with the cemetery. Owners who fail to do so would essentially be consenting to receiving notices and communications from the cemetery through a publication such as a newspaper ad or a posted notice. The bill also provides a procedure for these vacant burial lots to revert back to the cemetery after 50 years. Now, we've contacted some other local cemeteries in the county about this proposal, and they all agree that there is an issue with, vacant, unused burial lots that they don't really have a contact for, and it's been a longstanding problem. Now, I expect to hear some public input that the reversion of the vacant burial lots to the cemetery should not occur at 50 years, but maybe at some longer period of time, like 75 years. And one cemetery owner suggested that if the owner does show up at some point in the future, that a new burial lot would be provided to them. So I think we'll get some public input on this. It's currently written as a statewide bill. It could be a Frederick County only bill. So we are soliciting some additional public input on that. And I think this demonstrates how this process has actually worked. Our outreach to the community has really brought us a diversity of legislative suggestions. Now, these four bills are the only bills that I'm advancing to the public hearing process, but there may be other bills and other ideas that come to my attention through the public process. Now, in addition to the four bills I'm advancing, the County Council voted recently to include one piece of legislation, that did not advance last year through the legislature, as well as two position statements. The council's bill, proposed by Councilmember Steve McKay, would change how vacancies on Frederick County's Board of Education are filled. Currently, under the county's charter, the county executive appoints a replacement, and the county council confirms that appointment. Councilmember McKay's bill would enable voters to choose a replacement under certain timing and circumstances. Under this legislation, special elections would be held to fill the vacant seat if the vacancy occurred in time to coincide with either a presidential or a gubernatorial election, which occurs every 2 years. Because the Board of Education members hold staggered terms, there are always school board positions on those ballots. Councilmember McKay's bill would have the newly vacant seat filled by the next highest vote getter in that election. So it is possible that somebody could be appointed to fill the seat, and that somebody different could be elected then to refill that seat on a more permanent basis. Now, the county executive would, again, continue to fill a vacancy by appointment if that vacancy occurs outside an election year. Now, if this bill sounds familiar to you, it's because it's the same legislation that has been introduced twice over the last couple of years. But because the last two legislative sessions were cut short as a result of COVID, the bill did not have time to win final approval. But this bill has been previously introduced and supported by our delegation. All of these bills are posted on the county's website at frederickcountymd.gov/legislative. In addition to the Board of Education vacancy bill, the County Council would like to gather input on two position statements that they have suggested. The first is a position statement to support changes to the wording that the county must use to advance the constant yield tax rate. And the second position statement would support legislation to address climate mitigation efforts and the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. In addition to these bills, we sought input from organizations and county agencies, boards and commissions, as well as municipalities. And we heard a variety of requests and support for other pieces of legislation. And so I want to highlight just a few of those today. But again, a complete list of all the letters we received and all the ideas and proposals we've received can be found again at frederickcountymd.gov/legislative. Three of our municipalities made requests for legislation. So you heard me talk about Emmitsburg for additional time to spend forest conservation fee revenue. Mount Airy and Newmarket also made requests. The town of Mount Airy would like to be added to the list of 67 other municipalities in the state that can work with owners of blighted properties. This authority is referred to as Urban Renewal Authority. Now, a similar bill moved through the House and the Senate last year. It was advanced by Mount Airy and picked up by our delegation, but it never received a final vote. So I expect to include a letter of support for that legislation this year when it's advanced by the town of Mount Airy. Newmarket also requested changes to how speed camera enforcement must be monitored requiring, you know, additional enforcement by others. And in my opinion, that bill does not have much likelihood of passing in Annapolis, so I don't intend to include it in my packet, but it's certainly included in the list of requests. All of the other requests that the county received were mostly for position statements or their requests for additional state funding for a variety of purposes. So, for instance, the Road Board is asking the state to restore highway user revenue funding to local governments. Till 2008, these funds were directed to local jurisdictions who relied on the revenue to maintain local roadways, municipal and county. The funds were essentially eliminated during the Great Recession and have not been fully restored. They've been partially restored. They've been restored to a greater extent to municipalities and to counties. The Affordable Housing Council has asked us to support speeding up the implementation of a law that provides legal counsel to residential tenants. This law is set to phase in October of 2025. So the Affordable Housing Council is asking for this to take effect sooner, by October of 2023, 2 years earlier. I would note that Frederick County already has an excellent program in place to provide legal counsel to residents facing eviction that would meet the requirements of this bill. So we have that today. And that's another example of the fact that Frederick County is a model of good governance in the state. The Mental Health Advisory Council is requesting funding to address the rise in the need for mental health services over the past year and a half. Justice Jobs of Maryland has asked for funding so transit can offer bus service on Sundays to match what is available on Saturdays. We currently don't have transit service on Sundays. Transportation access is one of the leading barriers to employment for many people in our community. The county's Transportation Services Advisory Council, known as TSAC, also would like to see increased transit funding, among other topics. Other organizations that provided some kind of input include the United Way, the ARC of Frederick County, the County Sustainability Commission, the Containment Lab Community Advisory Committee, the Social Services Advisory Board, the Sierra Club, a Catoctin group, and the Historic Preservation Commission. Again, the full list of their suggestions and their letters, the requests for funding support, is available on the county website, again, at frederickcountymd.gov/legislative. And we do share all of these letters in our package with the delegation. This is also where you can find relevant information and updates as we continue through the legislative session and this process. Again, all the letters will be included in the package. Expect to receive additional input and maybe some new items and new ideas to consider for inclusion in the county's legislative package in the weeks ahead. So if anyone in the public has county-specific legislation that they would like to see introduced or would like to comment on the current proposals, I invite them to call into the virtual town hall meeting. The date is Wednesday, October 13th at 6 p.m. The meeting will be on Frederick County Government TV and web stream through the county's website. You can watch it at frederickcountymd.gov/legislative-town-hall. You can just go to the homepage and click on the TV icon and go to live stream at 6 p.m. on the 13th. You can also listen on your phone by calling a toll-free number, 855-925-2801, and entering meeting code 8634. And I will tell you, there are lots of people who actually like the virtual format and like the ability to be able to have greater flexibility in participating in the public process. The legislative package is, again, a work in progress. I expect to present my legislative package on behalf of the county to the delegation at a joint meeting in mid-November. After the public process, I will then share all of whatever's in it with the county council, and then the state delegation will hold their own public meeting on Saturday, December 4th, though a time has not yet been determined. I want to thank everyone who has provided ideas, suggestions, and input. The local public process is an easy and local accessible way to help shape state legislation, and it's certainly easier than heading down to Annapolis during the session. It also reflects our value for open and transparent government and my belief that the best ideas come from the people. So to recap, the package currently includes five bills: modification to the forest funding to extend the forest banking program and the time frame for use of conservation funds, property tax notification to a third party for some of our most vulnerable citizens, redirection or disposition of the marriage ceremony fee to support the Historical Society, or Heritage Society, a new law related to the notification and disposition of vacant and unused burial lots, and a bill to change how vacancies are filled on the Board of Education. So you can see our public process works. We certainly have a diversity of ideas included this year. So I do want to thank everybody who's participated, and I want to thank all of you who are watching today for joining me, and I hope you will participate in the virtual public meeting on October 13th at 6 p.m. Thank you, and with that, we're adjourned.